Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 22 of Season 8 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg classic Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again...
Yeah, I'm telling you, you have us on and things are going to get weird.
No, it's not because of you. It's because... You know, if you do so many episodes saying one thing and then you have to try and do it by heart and remember something else, you know, I whatever.
I totally understand.
I know. I'm aware of you too. All right. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Walt Murray of the, I was about to say the Alan Sanders Show. Of.
I have filled in a few times, so.
Yes. And joining me once again today is Walt Murray of The Wilder Ride. Welcome back to the show, Walt.
Thank you, Rob. It's great to be back.
Yes, it definitely is, especially, in this calm of Jackson. You know, that's what we got here.
The calm of Jackson. That is a good way to put it.
Yeah. So minute 22 begins with Jackson continuing to line up the shot and ends with soldiers returning fire from the trench. So basically yesterday we left things off with, Miller sending Jackson to go take to find a sweet spot, you know, to give them some cover fire or whatever. And, he reaches his spot and starts lining up the shot. And then we ended them yesterday, and today we're going to continue with that. And again, it's just great watching the way that Barry Pepper plays this character. You know, he's just calm and collective, just lining up the shot, taking his time, not concerned that anyone's going to try and pick him off. And, you know, he's just sitting there, and they even... The camera shot zooms in even on his finger as he's making, you know, as he's taking the shot itself. And I mean, the shot is beautiful because, you know, we see more or less from his perspective, you know, this German soldier up on top, and then the guy's head more or less just explodes as he shoots him right between the eyes or in the eye or whatever it is, you know, and it goes back to the realism that they do in this movie. You know, we see, blood and guts just, or blood and brains just flying all over the place. I mean, the special effects here are just amazing.
You know, amazing.
Just the way they do it, you know.
Well, I think this is really the first war movie that I remember, maybe one or two before this, but where it was this
brutal,
authentic and brutal and gruesome. And really not in a, you know, not in a way that's like a slasher movie. It really is. You feel like that it's true to history and true to what these guys experienced in this battle. And so as you're watching it can get a little overwhelming, but you feel like it's very accurate and true to life,
right? And again, the that's what they're trying to show here. They're trying to show us the realism of it all, and you know, they do an amazing job of it, because you know, they're I've mentioned this many times, there are a lot of D-Day veterans that either that in some way complimented the film on its authenticity, you know, either by saying I can't sit here and watch this anymore because it reminds me of what I went through, you know, all those years ago, or you know, people that just said, wow, you know, you really just you got it perfect, you know.
Yeah. So. My dad's a combat veteran, and I remember for a couple of days after he saw this, you could tell that it had an impact on him.
Did he fought in World War II? Or
no, he Vietnam.
Vietnam.
Yeah, he was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam, and so you could see the impact on him after he watched this, of just the how real and accurate it was.
Did he ever discuss that with you, or you just noticed it?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. He never really talked much about the war until I was in college and he saw a platoon, and that was really the first time he talked about anything beyond how lousy the politics of it was. After he saw Saving Private Ryan, we did talk a little bit about the brutality of it, and he talked for maybe a minute or two about it. I get the impression that it's very true to life.
Yeah, that's the impression that I've gotten also from people that I've discussed that with. You know, I have an uncle that fought in the Battle of the Bulge, and he was really interested in borrowing my DVD set of Band of Brothers. This was years ago, because
Oh.
he passed away. He passed away probably about 5 or 6 years ago, maybe even a little more than that. So we're talking like 15, 20 years ago. He watched it. And he said he watched it once, and he said it brought back too many memories. He's never going to watch it again, but he said, wow, it was just really, really authentic with the stuff that they showed. So, that again, that's part of what, Spielberg and Tom Hanks wanted to get out of this. The same way with Apollo 13. You have the same thing with Tom Hanks wanting to do that. Just that they wanted to take a real situation and make people remember this forever.
Well, and I think it brings an appreciation to, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of getting us off track here, but it brings an appreciation to me of what heroes really are and what they go through, and also how bad war sucks and how much we should avoid it as much as we can.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Again, this is a war movie, which is really an anti-war movie, just like Platoon and Apocalypse Now, and the list goes on and on. Most real movies about war, and we're not talking about just action movies. Most war movies that are dramas are trying to show you that war is hell, and you should do
Yes.
all you
Yeah.
can to avoid it. That's what
Yeah.
it comes down to.
I agree 100%.
And that's what they do here.
And they do a perfect job of it.
Yes, they really do. And we see just the body of the German guy just convulse and fall backwards. And then they bring us back to the beach, which I always find really interesting, because there's really no connection here to these characters. It's just once again showing us what's going on the beach. And we see basically an army chaplain lying on someone, and he says, "Oh my God, I am heartily sorry for having offended thee. I detest my sins for having offended thee, O Lord. I detest my sins for having offended thee, O Lord." Now, me being Jewish, I have no idea where that's from. I had to look it up, obviously. You might know what it is. I don't know.
I'm Protestant, but I believe that's a cat that's Catholic last rites.
Well, that's what I thought it was, and I looked up last rites, and I have all this information about last rites and stuff like that. But it's actually, I think it's called an act of contrition,
Okay.
right? So, I mean, I found that the act of contrition, the quote of what you say is the same thing. Oh my God, I'm heartily sorry for having offended thee, and I detest all my sins because of the just punishments, but most of all because they have offended thee, my God, who art all good and deserving of all my love. I firmly resolve, with the help of thy grace, to sin no more and to avoid the near occasion of sin. Now, if this is connected to last rites, I don't think you would say that part. Maybe it's a combination of the two.
Yeah, it could be like a prayer of repentance, and yeah, and I'm not as versed on my Catholicism as I probably should be.
Well, again, I have an Catholic, out. But,
yeah.
I have a past here. Yeah.
So maybe my Catholic friends can send me an email and correct me on this.
Right. So, it probably is connected to the last rites because it makes sense. Like, what else would this priest be doing at this point besides giving last rites to this guy on the beach? You know, because he's not trying to help him. You know, he's not like holding his wound and trying to, you know, do some medical thing. And obviously, this probably is part of the last rites. I wasn't able to find like the verses that you say during last rites. So, you know, and then when I came across that the words for the act of contrition, which are very similar, so I thought maybe it's connected. But, you know, I'm assuming, I assume there is some sort of connection between the two. But anyone out there who knows, feel free to let us know if there's anybody out there who really knows, just let us know.
Yeah, when you have Alan on, you can ask him. He grew up Catholic, so he may have a little bit better idea. So, but I do see a connection here when they go back to the beach, because you have the priest praying over the guy or giving last rites or whatever. And then the next guy is laying on the beach praying the rosary.
Correct.
So you do have about a 10 or 15 second run there of, Jackson finishing his reciting of scripture, the priest, and then the guy reciting the rosary.
Right. So no, but my point is that it's not connected to the actual action of what's going on with Miller and his men.
Correct.
That's the thing. Yeah, right. My question was, why are they taking us out of that? Except for, you know, possibly showing us, okay, here you have Jackson who's praying, and then you have the priest who's praying, and then, you know, you have this next guy who starts praying. He goes, "Listen to me, Lord," and then starts praying in Latin.
Yeah, so he's kind of a traditional Catholic, praying in Latin.
Correct. So, and as you mentioned, he's holding rosary beads. I actually did not know this, but apparently there's a certain prayer. There's a structure of the prayer for the rosary. There's like different things that you say one after the other. And I guess maybe the idea of a rosary is to help you remember the order or something like that. That's what I sort of was able to figure out, that, you know, you start with the sign of the cross, and then you have the Apostles' Creed, then the Lord's Prayer, then Hail Mary, then Glory Be, and then you have, then you have another large bead where you say the Lord's Prayer again. And then you continue with announcing the mystery. I don't know what that really is. The Lord's Prayer on another large bead. And then you have the Hail Mary on each of the 10 adjacent small beads. Okay, so you're saying it numerous times for that. And then you have the Glory Be on the space between the next large bead. And then following that, you conclude it by saying the Hail Holy Queen, followed once again by the sign of the cross. So, I mean, that's an interesting concept. You know, in order to try and like remind you of how to recite the prayer, you know, it depends on what color bead or what size bead, you know, you're touching at that moment, and it reminds you of that. So I like that concept. You know, I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, interesting. A Jewish guy and a Presbyterian trying to figure out Catholic theology, but I can certainly understand. Yeah, I mean, that's great. It's kind of makes it easy to remember how to pray and what to pray.
Exactly. I was hoping Father David would have agreed to be on this movie, but he declined. So, you know, I'm hoping to get his perspective on that. You know, if you know. And the last time I spoke to him was It's a Wonderful Life, when we were talking all about angels and stuff like that. So
that seems more his speed. Yeah.
apparently he doesn't discuss last rites, you know, on a battlefield.
Interesting.
Apparently. I don't know. And, no, but I like the way that they are connecting Jackson with his praying to other guys that are praying in similar but different situations. You know, and like when this guy's praying in the rosaries, you see in the background, you know, a body lying behind him. It could be someone that's just injured, but it's somebody who's flat on their back. No, he's just injured because he's moving back and forth. You know, pulling his leg or trying to get it. And then you know, it goes back and we have a very close zoom of Jackson's face, and he continues to pray and says, "All my strength has thee to help me." Now, I don't know if you remember yesterday when we were talking about the you know, the psalm that he was saying, right? Okay, this is actually the second line of that psalm. So it's very interesting that, you know, we have let's say 25 seconds between the two you know, the two verses. You know, so it's a quite, on the one hand you can look at it and say that maybe it's a continuity error. On the other, you could just be saying he is so calm right now that he's taking his time. You know, and you know, so therefore, okay, so he said one verse and then, you know, he paused and waited a little bit and then continued with it. So, you know, you can look at it from either perspective, you know, from that. And then I love the zoom out that they do just to show us, you know, as he's praying, you know, just how in the moment he is with what he's doing here. You know, he,
He really is as focused as you could possibly be in that
that's right.
situation. I mean,
He's
he's
in the zone,
tuned
as they
in.
say.
And with all that chaos going on, that's pretty amazing.
That's right. And then he takes his second shot, and you know, we see all the sandbags exploding, and as it happens, we see, you know, the two Germans that are still alive start cascading down the side of the mountain because he somehow found the right place, you know, to shoot that the two of them are going to fall. You know, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that scene because it is like a grenade going off or something right at the front of those bags, and I've never been able to figure out what exactly happened there.
You're saying that maybe he shot a grenade.
Well, I don't think that's what happened, but the explosion is like that. And I know from, you know, basically I don't know what it probably shooting a 308 or a 30-06. Probably 308. Anyway, he's not shooting an explosive round, I don't
No,
think.
I don't think so
And those
either.
bags definitely blow up. So I don't know, or you know, there's an explosion there. So I've never been able to figure out what happened there, whether somebody else, you know, fired a grenade or what happened. I've never been able to figure that out on that
No, but the
scene.
explosion, we only see dirt and dust fly around. There's no like fire.
No,
You know,
mm-mm.
so you know, what I've always assumed is he hit, you know, the right sandbag that just pulled it all down. You know.
Yeah, and that could be,
Which is
and
very
who
impressive. I
knows?
mean, I agree with you. It's a little confusing from that perspective, but
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily need an answer, but
right.
I've always wondered if anybody knew what was supposed to have happened there.
Correct. I do not beyond what we see here. Sorry.
Yeah, maybe there is not an answer. So.
Correct. And then these two guys just start falling down, and then we have a group of soldiers that are, you know, standing behind some barbed wire, and you know, they're great. They're very happy, and they just start shooting at them. You know, and it looks like they're basically shooting as you know, like doing their firing squad, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and I can imagine. I mean, they've just had hundreds, if not thousands, of rounds rain down on them from these guys, and they are taking their revenge
Correct.
and settling the score here.
That's right. Do you know the official term for a firing squad, execution by firing squad?
I should know this. I don't know that off the top of my
It's
head.
fusillading.
Fusillating, right. Okay.
Yeah. And it's a capital punishment that is most common in the military, and especially during times of war. And obviously they use it because it's a simple method that you don't have to really you don't have to go very far to find the information, to find what all the parts needed for it, that type of thing.
Right. Yeah, it makes total sense.
That's right. And I mean the whole idea of it is that it's just an easy way while you're in the field to carry out a sentence against somebody and stuff like that. It's usually used in military courts because of cowardice, desertion, espionage, murder, mutiny, or treason.
And probably goes back as long as there have been rifles.
Oh yeah, definitely goes. It goes back very, very far. Apparently, the first choice of doing something like this, first time that was executed by archers,
Oh, wow.
when King Edmund the Martyr of East Anglia was tied to a tree and executed by Viking archers on the 20th of November, 869.
Wow. Okay.
So the idea does go pretty far back from that
Very
perspective.
interesting.
Yeah, and sometimes when you have a group of soldiers that are I guess given the task of shooting, so they sometimes will give numerous soldiers blank cartridges.
Yep.
Obviously, they do this either a single blind or double blind, where nobody really knows who has it and who doesn't have it. The idea is to reinforce the sense of the responsibility, trying to get rid of the sense of responsibility between all the members of a firing squad, by saying that it's possible that you weren't the one who shot him, that type of thing.
Yeah, guess it makes you
And
live with yourself.
correct, and it also gives a pleasant plausible deniability, that I didn't shoot them. It wasn't me. It
Right. Yeah.
was
Yeah.
Walt. It
So
wasn't me.
you can
I didn't
actually
have it.
sleep at night.
That's right. I mean it's an interesting idea. And in America, do you know that there are states that is the way they carry out executions?
I know that up until the last few years that the state of Utah still had that as an option. I didn't realize there were any other states.
Okay, we'll go back first through a little bit of the history within the U.S. So, during the War of Independence, Washington approved, killing a soldier by if or executing a soldier by a firing squad, but in the end, they decided to pardon him instead of killing this guy. During the Civil War, they executed 573 men, and of those, 433 of them were a firing squad. And how do you think the breakdown would be between the Union and Confederate Army? Which one of them do you think had more men executed by a firing squad?
Being a son of the South, I would say that it was probably the Confederacy that executed many more people by firing squad.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And the same goes for the number of people that they executed, the number of
Yeah.
deserters or whatever it is. So the Union by firing squad, they killed 186 men, and the Confederacy 247. So we're talking a difference of 60 more men were shot by the Confederacy by firing squad. And the full number of men that were executed were for the Union it was 267, and for the Confederacy it was 306.
Oh, okay.
In 1913 in Nevada, they shot the they executed a prisoner by firing squad, and his problem was is that after that, they couldn't find five men who were willing to be a part of the firing squad. So they had to get like
Okay.
this, they had to create this machine that would do that. Since 1960, there have been four executions by firing squad, and you were correct as to which state that has happened in. Utah. Utah is the only state that has executed anyone, or that in modern times have executed people. They banned it in Utah in 2004, but there were still three men on death row that since it wasn't retroactive, that still were entitled to be shot. By the, by that method. And in Idaho, they banned execution by firing squad in 2009. And then Oklahoma was actually the only state that would still utilize that method of execution, even though it wasn't the main part of it wasn't the main way of execution. It was a secondary method that they decided to do it. In 2019, South Carolina, the Senate voted to revive the proposal to bring back the electric chair and add firing squads to its execution options. And in 2021, they signed a bill that the default method would be an electric chair, but they could use a firing squad if they chose to. South Carolina, though, has not performed any execution since 2013. So,
Interesting that it's still an option. That's
And then in 2022, the South Carolina Supreme Court scheduled the execution of a prisoner. By firing squad, and the prisoner himself chose to be executed by firing squad instead of electric chair, but in the end, the Supreme Court stayed his execution, and then he didn't need to. So, as of 2024, Idaho, Mississippi, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Utah are the only states that still use the firing squad as an option for the death penalty, and in 2023. The Tennessee legislator debated about whether to add it as one of their means of execution. And they actually passed the bill. So Tennessee is also another one of those states that that allows that. So, yeah, pretty
I
interesting
would have thought that that would be something that was no longer even on the books, but that's
stuff.
interesting.
Apparently not. Well, because it's not in Georgia, so you don't know about it. So that makes sense.
Yeah, that's I mean, I do try to keep up with those kind of things, but
Well, now you know.
that's
Now you have a little
now I
bit more
know.
knowledge on that subject than you thought you would have.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And then, so after the scene of the soldiers shooting, these Germans that are falling down the mountain, we get a shot of Miller, and you see a look on his face that is, it looks as if he's just dumbfounded that this is what these guys are doing. If you look at second 31, you can see his face, and he's just, he looks a little shocked that this is what's happening. And then the shot changes, and we see that these guys are still shooting these German, these two German guys that have fallen down to the point where, they're just wasting ammo. By the amount of by the amount of bullets that are being used by this whole thing. So,
Yeah.
because we see a very large group of soldiers that are all shooting at this guy. And
Yeah.
then, right. And
I've
then,
got to think that adrenaline and anger
yeah, of
and
course.
everything kind of takes over at that
Yeah,
moment.
for sure, for sure. And then Miller's is it's back on Miller, and Miller screams, "Dog one exit right here." And he's letting people know that they can make it through. They have a spot that's opened. There's a breach. And he motions for people to come in, and then And then we see Mike, and he goes, we see Tom Sizemore just like start pushing himself up, and he goes, "We're in business."
Tom Sizemore is not the most athletic, fast-moving guy on the screen in this
No,
movie.
he's not, but he's great. And
He is great.
I love the way that when he and Miller stand up to start moving forward, we see in the background once again the beach. We see men that are still arriving on the beach, and we see the Czech hedgehogs and all that stuff. So it's great. They
There are some amazing shots in these first 30 minutes.
Yeah, for sure. And did you notice that Mike does something as he stands up?
Oh yeah, he scoops his tobacco out and throws
That's
it on the
right.
ground.
And throws it on the ground. Littering, littering.
Yes.
I wonder what the fine in Normandy is for littering,
At this point, they may have stopped keeping track.
Yeah, probably. Probably. And then they just start moving forward, and we see Caparzo behind him also. Basically the rest of this minute, we have about 10 or 12 seconds. It's showing just the US soldiers moving forward, advancing, trying to get through the various trenches. And we get another bird's eye view of the beach. We see the boats in the water behind them, but the view that they give us looks like it's basically the German view of where these shots where these guys were just shot from.
Yeah, it is. And it's the first time in 22 minutes we're off the beach.
Yes, definitely. And again, they show the guys running through the trenches, and we even see a guy get shot in the back as he's
Yeah.
running through. Again, blood splurting all over the place, and the guy like just falls down as it's going. But the tracking shot is great because it at the beginning it's following him, and then he falls down after getting shot, but it continues.
Yeah.
It just the fluid motion of the camera is just great in this spot as he's
Done
doing it.
so well.
Yeah.
So well.
And basically that's the way that this minute ends. So, Walt, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, just a powerful minute. Just so much going on and a great transition from the beach to the push inland. There's a lot here. We could talk for a long time, but it's just a phenomenal minute.
So every Tuesday we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So you probably had a little trouble with this one, just like you did yesterday, but oh well, that's part of the fun here.
Yeah, Tom Hanks has always been one of my favorite actors. So, I mean, I could throw in a bunch of others that didn't make my top five, like Turner and Hooch and Big and Sully and a bunch of others. But top five, probably one of his lesser known movies, a movie he did, a comedy with Dan Aykroyd called Dragnet. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but I
Of course I
rewatched it a couple
have.
years ago.
Dun, dun, dun,
Goofy movie, but
dun.
awesome. Yeah, it's an amazing movie. If you haven't seen it, it's highly recommended. Apollo
I
13.
was with Connie Swell last night. Don't you mean with the
Oh.
Virgin Connie Swell? Dun, dun, dun. You see, I'm a little familiar with it, Walt.
You are a little familiar with it. Yeah, it's so great. I mean, just oh man, we could do an episode just on that movie. And then Apollo 13, Saving Private Ryan is in my top five, and it's hard to kind of put them in order, but and then one from a couple years ago, I believe it was a Netflix movie, A Man Called Otto. Tom Hanks did such a great job with that film, playing kind of a crotchety old man, but a guy with a lot of heart. It's a great movie if you haven't seen it. And Forrest Gump would round up my top five. And then I have an honorable mention as well. The first thing I ever remember Tom Hanks in was a show from probably the late 70s, early
Bosom
80s called
Buddies.
Bosom Buddies. Yep. And classic comedy, definitely not what you would expect from Tom Hanks looking back on his career, but a great movie or a great TV show.
Yeah, I'm always amazed at the fact that if you look at Tom Hanks's early career where he was doing silly comedies, and then when you look at him now and you're like, I can't believe that someone thought to start giving him all these dramatic roles and knew that it would work.
We talked on The Wilder Ride about how comedic actors it's easier for an actor to move from comedy to more serious roles than it is more serious roles to comedy.
Right.
And I think it's the acting style and the talent requirements maybe. Correct. To do that.
Yeah. I always think that's why Robin Williams always excelled in dramatic roles.
Agreed. Yeah, I agree. Gene Wilder is an example of that, an obvious example for me. But Tom Hanks definitely is one of those people that made that transition well.
Yeah. For sure. My favorite one, though, is Don Rickles in Casino.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a great one.
Which always just shocks the hell out of me because it's such a great job of that role. Yeah.
And you keep waiting for him to give us a punchline.
That's right.
And it never comes.
Nope. Never comes. All right. Excellent. So, Walt, would you want to tell people once again where they can find Walt Murray?
You can find me over on a podcast called The Wilder Ride. My podcast partner and I, Alan Sanders, go through the movies of Gene Wilder 1 minute at a time. We have been on hiatus for a little while, keep talking about what we're going to do next. We've done everything from a couple seasons of first season with Young Frankenstein, second season with the comedy classic Blazing Saddles. We've done a little bit of interviewing friends, family, celebrities, astronauts, mountain climbers, and then just a couple of special episodes here and there. So check that out at thewilderride.com or on any podcatcher.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can send me an email to movierobminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Instagram, you can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So, until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this.
Reveries of days gone by.